are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, episode 4, Wednesday, November the 20th, and some malice at the Palace memories today with someone who is courtside. This is your boy, Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, the sports writer here in Detroit City, covering the NBA for the Detroit News and Associated Press. A Pistons fan and follower my whole life and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for the listen. Thanks for spreading the word about the Locked On Pistons podcast today. We are going to talk about the malice in the Palace. I'm going to give you my personal recollection and memories of that night. I know we're a day off of the anniversary, but that's just what you get here with your local Locked On Pistons podcast host. But we're also going to talk to Larry Lage of the Associated Press, who was there on that night, November 19th, 2004, at the Palace of Auburn Hills as the Pistons took on the Indiana Pacers. Larry's got some good stories from that night, and also the aftermath of how it stacks up in his career of all sorts of different things he's covered in the Detroit area and Michigan and on the international stage as well. Later on, we're going to talk about tonight's game against the Chicago Bulls. Get you ready for the Pistons, who are back in action for the first time since Friday night tonight in Chicago, taking on the Bulls at the United Center. But give me a follow, by the way, on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H. Another underscore for that, also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons Dash. Matt Shook. But like I said, tonight in Chicago and then home for Atlanta, the Hawks on Friday night, and then the second half of a back-to-back against the Milwaukee Bucks on the road on Saturday night before coming back next week at home for Orlando, and then a home-and-home with Charlotte on Wednesday in the Queen City the night before Thanksgiving, and then on Black Friday the night after Thanksgiving back here in Detroit for that one. Like I said, we'll talk about the Bulls a little bit later on tonight, but wanted to give you my recollections and some thoughts on the malice at the Palace. I was working as a senior in college at Mount Pleasant in Central Michigan University, but I was my senior year actually working for the Morning Sun newspaper, covering preps for them, and being a Friday night like it was probably out at a game, maybe a high school football game, and came back into the office with the Matt Mowrys and Eric Herters and Jim Lotties of the world, writing up some high school coverage, also grabbing phone calls to get the results for the games that we were in out at the Vestaburg game or the St. Louis game or the Ithaca game or Alma game or whatever games that were going on that night in Isabella County and Gratiot County and the surrounding area as well. A lot of plugs out there to Central Michigan today. But the fight starts happening. We got it on TV. We got the volume off, but just kind of keeping an eye on things. Ironically, our guest a little bit later on, Larry Lage for the Associated Press, finishing up his story as the game was about to end, and we're probably at the Morning Sun waiting for his story to get posted on the AP wire so we can put it into the pages of the Morning Sun for the Saturday paper the next day. And of course, all kind of hell breaks loose at that point. Larry will fill us in with what's going on at the Palace. But you know, I'm a college student. It's my senior year at CMU, and of course, you know what my plans are once I leave the morning or leave the newsroom there at 11 o'clock or whatever it ends up being, 10:30, something like that, that I leave and my duties of being a prep sports part-timer are done for the night. Of course, I'm meeting up with some friends at an apartment somewhere. We're going to drink some beers. And of course, this is the only thing that people are talking about. We're watching the post-game show of the ESPN Talking Heads. We're getting into arguments with each other about who was at fault or who was the wrong person in it. And the thing that I'll remember most about that night from watching the coverage and all that is the way that John Saunders, the late John Saunders, by the way, of ESPN, who's kind of the studio host of the postgame show with a couple of the players. I kind of, in the back of my mind, think it might have been Greg Anthony and Tim Legler, although I could be wrong. Tom Tolbert might have been in there, but whoever the former players and current talking heads were at that time, I just remember that John Saunders kind of went on his soliloquy about how Detroit fans are punks, and I just thought that was such a strange way to point, you know, every single fan in that broad brush. Of course, and this isn't me justifying the actions of Detroit fans. This isn't me saying that every single fan did the right thing that night. Or even, I just don't, you know, how can you watch that whole thing unfold, Malice in the Palace, and your biggest takeaway is that the fans are the biggest issue that was the problem here. The fact that the players ran into the damn stands, that was the biggest problem. That's something that doesn't happen every day or hardly ever in sports. Fans reacting to crazy things that are happening on the court or on the field. We've seen fans react to bad calls by throwing things on the field. When there's an actual brawl going on that was initiated by the players, and I know that if you want to get technical about it and argue that John Green throwing the plastic cup, quote-unquote, initiated the whole thing, again, I think we can all agree that Ron Artest didn't need to run up into the stands at that point and all kind of hell broke loose. I also had some Indiana Pacers fans, and I think one of the guys who hosts some of the shows, not our friend Tony East, but another one of the Pacers podcasts, saw him on Twitter maybe a couple years ago now complaining that Ben Wallace didn't get something like a suspension that Jermaine O'Neal and Ron Artest and Steven Jackson and those guys got. And again, I would argue that what happened with Ben Wallace and Ron Artest on the court at the Palace, while may have been the spark that ignited the whole thing, it's something that happens on basketball courts very often, especially back then. Now these kind of things happen a little bit less, which I guess is a good thing, although I'm kind of old school. I don't mind a brawl every now and then. But geez, man, I mean, this is what happens. This is part of the game of NBA basketball. Sometimes a shoving match ensues, and sometimes even some fists get thrown on the NBA court. Not the biggest deal in the world, but running into the stands and starting to fight fans, that is a big deal. So I just want to kind of clear up the record for it there. I hope you guys were as frustrated about that coverage. I know that a lot of the listeners, by the way, don't even remember this or maybe weren't old enough to have any kind of memories about it. But I'll never forget John Saunders. And if I'm honest with you, I kind of hated John Saunders the rest of his career because he obviously had something up his butt about Detroit fans. He was a Western Michigan graduate, I know. He played hockey over there in Kalamazoo. So he's already got one or two strikes in my book for the WMU affiliation. But, man, he's got something up his butt about Detroit fans, and that came out that night in a major way. And when you have the quote-unquote straight guy, the studio host in the post-game show, they're giving license to the former players to unload on fans as opposed to saying the reasonable thing and talking about how this is a huge black eye for the NBA and Ron Artest should be kicked out for the rest of the season, which he pretty much was. You know, I think it's just a crazy license for those guys to pile on fans when that shouldn't have been near the biggest story of the night. But thanks to ESPN and thanks to their post game, that was kind of what was talked about in the immediate aftermath of what was going on there. But like I said, I've got Larry Lage coming and joining with us here after the break to talk about this. And he has an interesting perspective of being courtside as the 15-year anniversary of the Malice at the Palace 2004 in Auburn Hills, Michigan, a big night for the NBA. A lot of things changed after that. That season definitely changed after that. Don't know if the Pistons would have been to the NBA Finals in 2005 had the Pacers season not been derailed like that. But Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment. Start listening with a 30-day Audible trial. Choose one audiobook and two Audible originals absolutely free. Visit audible.com/lockedonNBA. Are you listening on the go? If you can't visit Audible you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. Again, lockedonpodcast.com/offers. Up next, we got Larry Lage, one of my bosses at the Associated Press. That's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast.
Yes, sir!
All right, and now we're being joined by the great Larry Lage, one of my bosses. I have several bosses. He's the Associated Press sports editor in Detroit. Larry, thanks for taking the time to join us tonight.
Yeah, no problem, Matt.
Yeah, so now as we tape this, it is the 15-year anniversary of the Malice at the Palace, and obviously I wanted to get your perspective on it. You were right front row for it, so take it from the top, Larry. What happened to you guys there, of course,
well,
in Auburn Hills?
Yeah, I had my head down because I was writing my story for the Associated Press, November 19th, 2004, a day that'll live in infamy. I'm not really a master of dates or stats or records, but that one I'll never forget. So I had my head down and I hear a commotion. And so I walked over to the center of the scorer's table to look at the larger monitor that the officials use to look at replays and that kind of thing to see what happened. Because where I was sitting at the time was next to Rick Mahorn, the radio analyst and bad boy. And so I left my seat next to him. Went about five seats to my right, and I'm watching to see what happened with Ron Artest and Ben Wallace with the shove from Ben. And Ron Artest is sitting maybe 20 feet to my right, laying on the scorer's table. And I remember thinking, like, it's kind of odd. But not as odd as the flying object that I saw out of my peripheral vision that hit Ron. And I saw it. And he's charging toward me. And I went back to my working area of the scorer's table. And now I'm in the eye of the storm. And then I put my foot on the scorer's table and I catapulted onto the court to get out of harm's way. Rick Mahorn, as you watch the video, is basically in the middle of it because it was right behind us where we were sitting, about the third row into the bowl. So Rick went to break it up. I went to get out of the way. And as soon as I hit the court, I called AP in New York and said, turn on ESPN. I need help.
Mm-hmm. Were you working that game by yourself, or was Dave there, Dave Hogue there working for you as well?
Dave Hogue was there with me as well. And we were, there's all kinds of social media posts about it today. And I asked Dave, did your laptop get stepped on? He said, no, I got knocked to the ground. There was all kinds of damage. I think Dana Gruder, who was working for the Oakland Press at the time, had a computer damage. I know H-Rod Blakely was there from MLive. Chris McCoskey, then the Pistons beat writer. You know, a lot of people say they were there, but there weren't that many of us there. So appreciate the opportunity to have the oral history here. So I got a great assist from our then Indianapolis sports writer, John Krasinski, who's gone on to do great things in the business now with The Athletic, covering sports up in Minnesota. He was in Indiana at the time and was feeding me stuff off of the Indiana broadcast. And the next day, just to date things, the next day I brought my mini TV VHS combo up to the palace because I recorded on VHS the whole aftermath. Uh-huh. And recorded it basically from Ben Wallace's two-hand shiver to the final act, which is kind of my favorite funny moment, is Jamal Tinsley was wielding a plastic dustpan that he took from one of the housekeepers, and I'm not sure if it was Mildred or Gertrude, and I swear to you those are the names of the sweet ladies that worked in that corner. If you watch the video, you can see this scene I'm talking about with Tinsley trying to get back onto the court with a dustpan. Like, what are you going to do with that?
any weapon when you need one.
So the whole thing was like 5 minutes. And I remember saying to Jerry, the security guy with the Pistons, can you believe that whole thing was only 5 minutes? And he said, Larry, 5 minutes in a blender is a long time. That stands as one of my favorite quotes of all time that I was able to use.
So I can imagine that, you know, this is like a minute left in the game. You've probably basically got your story all done. What does it turn into after that? Because obviously they're not going to have like the regular press conferences. They're trying to kick everyone out of the palace at that point. As a working writer for the AP that night, what was kind of the blow-by-blows of stories that you wrote or things that you did, interviews, that type of thing?
Well, the thing that, you know, we were just trying to do is just, if you just could watch the replays and explain what happened and get out of the way and then try to provide some context where I think we called it one of the worst melees in the history of North American sports. I mean, people have died in soccer matches and things like that. So that's kind of, nobody died. You know, we had some access to coaches. I remember Larry Brown was like in tears. He was just beside himself because, you know, he's such a student and servant of the game. You know, people could say what they want to say about Larry Brown, but he loves basketball and everything about it. And he knew right away how bad it was. And I was actually joking with Chris McCoskey today in a text, thanking him for telling me to go home because it was like 2 or 3 in the morning and I'm still working the story and I'm talking to a cop and he said, Larry, go home. So I was laughing about that with Chris McCoskey today. But I turned down the only time in my career that I had like CBS This Morning and I think maybe Fox News Channel. Like I had morning show producers blowing up my phone wanting to put me up in a hotel in the Detroit area to come on the next morning. and I just wanted to go home and go to bed. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want or need the publicity because I had my dream job then at, what was I, 31 years old, and now I'm 46 and still have my dream job. So really don't care who knows me, as long as my bosses do and people in the business do and my check's still clear. So, you know, it's the only time in my life, I had news programs calling me, wanting to have me on and to put me up and have me on at like 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. And now we're talking like 2 or 3 a.m. And I live in Ann Arbor and I'm in Auburn Hills and I got a wife and a kid and I don't really want to wake them up to tell them I'm not coming home because I'm going on TV and all that. So I just went home and went to bed. And of course, the story kept unfolding over the days and weeks and months to come with suspensions and David Stern coming up with a dress code for players and all kinds of, corrective measures to try to make sure it never would happen again. But, you know, it was just such a freak show. And, I hope I never cover something in sports that transcends sports quite like that one did, because, someone will probably have to die to have something be bigger than that, because, we're still talking about it 15 years later. And I think people will be talking about it forever because, you know, as crazy as like the Miles Barrett thing was with did I mispronounce his name? The crazy Cleveland Brown who swung at the guy. As crazy as that was, you know, there wasn't any fans involved. That's what just really took this to a whole nother level. And, you know, there's a million thoughts and memories I have. And one of them is that Jermaine O'Neal is so lucky that the floor was slippery when he planted his left foot to punch somebody because he slipped and didn't have much force on his punch. If he plants that left foot on dry wood, hardwood, and punches that guy, he might have died. And Jermaine O'Neal might still be in jail. But he lost his plant leg and didn't get as much as he wanted on that punch, which turned out to be a blessing for him for sure.
Yeah, 6'10", professional athlete like that, punching down on someone who's on the ground, like you said, that could have been some serious damage. But Larry Lage here of Associated Press, you mentioned your job, but I wanted to ask you one last question. And you're all over the place in Detroit sports, covering all the different teams, Michigan and Michigan State as well, the Tom Izzo years, the Jim Harbaugh years, and all the way back with Michigan football as well. But where do you talk about the malice at the Palace like more than anything else? I know you've covered Olympics and all this other stuff in your career as well. Is this the thing that you've had the most conversations about as far as an event you've covered over the years, or is there some other things that kind of stand out that might take the cake over this one single night?
I would say this was number one. You know, when I do lists of like the biggest events I've covered by myself. So let's take out the Olympics. Let's take out the Super Bowl. Let's take out the Ryder Cup, Final Four, blah, blah, blah. Cause I'm, you know, one of four or five or dozens of writers at those, but in terms of being by myself and as by myself with a staff writer, as you know, I always have freelancer or two helping me, thank gosh. But it's number one by a mile. And number two would be the Galarraga Jim Joy's imperfect game. And then after that, it would, you know, there, you know, it's, it gets a little more, nebulous, if you will. It's, you know, it's, is it the Duckett clock game? Is it the punt block with Michigan State?
Yeah, Westbrook Hail Mary, something like that.
You know, I was not there. I was an intern in Lansing at a TV station for that, but I did watch that on TV. But, you know, one and two are really easy to identify. After that, I'd have to kind of sit down. And again, especially taking out, you know, Olympics and Rose Bowls and Final Fours and Stanley Cups and things like that that I've covered. You know, I didn't do those by myself in terms of a staff writer situation. So 1-2 is very easy to identify. And number one is number one by a mile. And, you know, no one's calling me about the Galarraga Jim Joyce game. But people are still talking about this one because, you know, frankly, I bet you there weren't more than a dozen working media members at this game. We're talking about a November NBA game, and you've got to be, you know, a diehard to really be locked in on the NBA in November. But you know, it was a big game because you had Rick Carlisle with the Pacers, you had, you know, two really good teams, and defending champion Pistons. And, you know, the Pacers really were hit hard by that, the Pistons to a lesser degree. But, you know, both franchises were definitely shook by that. The Pacers were absolutely devastated, as they should have been, because they were the ones that went up in the stands and took it to a whole nother level. Of course, you could say, you know, if the cup doesn't hit them, Artest doesn't go to the stands. But
yeah, and I kind of feel like as a college student watching this kind of unfold, as I was working at the Morning Sun in Mount Pleasant, Michigan that night on a Friday night, that the Pacers seemed like they had the balance of power that year going into the 04-05 season, that maybe they were the team to beat in the NBA that season. And, of course, that derailed it completely right there. But any other final thoughts for you, or memories, or other random things from the Malice of the Palace you want to share with us, Larry?
No, that was a pretty good one. Somewhere in my archives, I have my notepad from that night. I used to use a yellow legal pad, and I don't keep much stuff because if I did, I'd need like thousands of square feet, and I don't have that. But I think somewhere in my archives, I have my yellow legal pad with my play-by-play, which tailed off late in the game. Punctuated by a footprint that I believe is Rick Mahorn's.
And this is probably a pretty big one. Maybe he took the whole legal pad there. But Larry Lage, thanks for taking the time. Follow him on Twitter at Larry Lage. That's L-A-G-E, Associated Press Sports Editor in Detroit, Michigan, and covering all things Michigan and Detroit sports. So thanks again for taking the time.
All right, Matt.
And thanks again to Larry for taking the time. But attention, past, present, and future MyBookie players. During Thanksgiving week, MyBookie is offering a risk-free bet on the Bears-Lions game. Simply choose a team against the spread for up to $250. If you win, congrats. You've got extra holiday spending money. But if you lose, congratulations to you as well. It's a freebie. MyBookie will give you all your money back. It's a no-brainer because you literally cannot lose. It's no risk. All Thanksgiving gravy. It doesn't matter whether you're an experienced player or a first-time customer. MyBookie welcomes all to come play, so quit waiting around and sign up today. Do you find yourself wanting to sports bet but have a lot of questions? Don't sweat it. MyBookie's patient customer service team can walk you through the process. And the best part is, if you join this Thanksgiving week, you still have one last shot to take advantage of the incredible sign-up offer. Just log on to mybookie.ag and make your first deposit with promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar to jumpstart your bankroll, and that's on top of this risk-free bet. Let me repeat, that's a guaranteed deposit match and a risk-free bet for Thanksgiving only. So if you're a true football fan, you do not want to let this opportunity pass you by. You simply cannot lose. Make sure you do your part to support your team this season. Hop on the gravy train and get on the action with MyBookie, promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You play, you win, you get paid. Well, as usual, we've ran a little bit long here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, but I do want to talk about tonight's opponent, the Chicago Bulls. Pistons back at the United Center for an 8 o'clock Eastern game tonight against the Bulls, who are 4-10, one of the three teams in the Eastern Conference who are below the Detroit Pistons in the standings right now. Daniel Gafford, the center from Arkansas, is one to watch. It was a guy that we talked about as possibly being that 30th pick in the draft. It would end up being Kevin Porter to the Cleveland Cavaliers after the Pistons traded away. So as we think about the backup center quandary, and we watch Daniel Gafford play tonight off the bench for the Bulls, worth keeping that one in mind there. Otto Porter, who kills the Pistons sometimes, he is out of the game tonight. He's injured for a couple weeks with a foot injury. So Wendell Carter Jr., who is hurt right now, he's going to be available according to the injury report. And Tony Snell for the Pistons will be out with the hip flexor that he has. So that's about it. I mean, obviously Reggie Jackson and obviously Kyrie Thomas are out. We know those guys are. But Derrick Rose and Blake Griffin are not on the injury report. It'll be interesting to see what their weekend plans are with the Pistons playing Friday and Saturday. You would imagine that they're not going to play back-to-backs. But since the Bulls beat the Pistons on November 1st by a six-point spread in the United Center, the Bulls have lost, I believe, six of their next eight games, only beating the Atlanta Hawks and the New York Knicks. They are currently on a three-game losing streak, giving up at least 115 points in each of those games. Now, two of those games were to the Milwaukee Bucks and one of them the Brooklyn Nets, who, although they've struggled, they're obviously a very competent team. But Kobe White, the point guard from North Carolina, is having some good results lately. Scored 27 in a game against the New York Knicks and 26 in a game against Milwaukee. Zach LaVine, who normally does well against the Pistons, obviously a very inefficient player for the Bulls, had 36 the other night against Brooklyn, so he's heating up a little bit. But, yeah, we'll see if the Pistons are able to take care of business. On the road, 4-9 right now, need some wins to turn this thing around. This is a red-letter game in my book, and according to the sports books, the Pistons are underdogs by 1.5 in Chicago. So that means neutral site, that the Pistons are only 1.5 better than the Bulls, but 1.5 underdogs on the road against the Chicago Bulls. So sad times for the Detroit Pistons, who would like to be a level or two ahead of the Chicago Bulls. But obviously that's not the situation right now, and we'll see how this thing plays out over the next couple weeks or so. But thanks again to Larry Lage of the Associated Press. Give him a follow on Twitter at Larry Lage. And thanks to you guys for listening for the Locked On Pistons podcast. We'll be back recapping tonight's game against Chicago and also looking ahead towards the weekend as Turkey Day is almost upon us. And looking forward to spending the rest of 2019 with you guys. And looking forward to a big 2020 for the Pistons organization as they try to turn things around and make the right moves going forward for the franchise. Your host, Matt Shook, saying thanks for listening. Talk to you guys tomorrow.